Welcome to Whiskey Wednesday, where we drink the finest whiskey and we argue about the internet's most important topics.
Because the only thing the internet doesn't love more is arguing and telling people that they're wrong.
Even though we may not really side with the side we've chosen, we're going to die on that hill because this is an argument.
So grab a drink of something, sit back and enjoy. Podcasters, thank you so much for listening today. We are so thankful that you pulled us up on your favorite podcasting outlet and hit that play button so you could listen to what we have today. We have some delicious bourbon and even more delicious conversation to be had. So make sure that you hit subscribe. We would love and covet your review, a 5-star review. We would covet anything less. We would not.
And dump it out. Pour it out of the glass.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. All right, let's get to it. Right, today, I'm super excited to bring you a rye.
Oh man, he's been talking about this for a long time now.
I love rye whiskey. Rye whiskeys are taking over my collection at home. The more I have, the more I want. And this is one that I'm actually super excited about because it's really hard to find. I had a good friend help me find this bottle. It's put out by Buffalo Trace. This is a Sazerac rye.
Sazerac, and it's fun to say.
And yeah, that name, it's pretty iconic in the world of whiskey drinks. There's actually a drink that's called the Sazerac that uses this rye.
Okay.
So it's, I'm just gonna read this to you. So this is from Buffalo Trace, and on their website it says, "The one and only New Orleans original. Sazerac rye whiskey symbolizes the tradition and history of New Orleans. Rye whiskey that dates back to the 1800s, around the time when saloons, veiled as coffee houses, began lining the streets of New Orleans. It was at the Sazerac Coffee House on Royal Street where local patrons were served toddies made with rye whiskey and, I'm just going to butcher this, Peychild's Bitters. The libation became known as the Sazerac, and America's first branded cocktail was born. This is the whiskey that started it all." So there is a lot of history to this.
Dude, I love nothing better than a good prohibition story.
I do too.
Yeah.
And all of them have it.
Right.
Unless
they're like new,
a new one.
Like
but,
new riff. Yeah.
But yeah, I do love one, yeah, a whiskey that has a story through that. And this is even cooler because it's named after a family's establishment during that time.
Little NOLA establishment.
And there's a drink. So the Sazerac cocktail is made with absinthe, sugar, whiskey, and bitters.
And absinthe?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's one thing I've actually never had is absinthe.
We're going to get it on camera, that's for sure.
I'll have to get some, because now it used to be illegal.
Yeah.
But now it's not. So yeah, go ahead and pour us some. I'll tell you a little bit about it. So 51% of this is rye, 39% corn, 10% malt. Age 6 years in a virgin American white oak barrels, 90 proof.
Okay.
And when you can find it, MSRP should be $23.
Should be. Keywords here, people.
It's probably at least double that most places. And so
make a product that would just sell for double than what we wanted to sell for.
Right. Yeah. There's so much need for it that.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you about why I love rye, and I'll also bring in a wheated whiskey sometimes, so we can kind of so you can taste that too. From what I've found, from the people I talk to, mm-hmm. that are whiskey lovers, if you're a wheated fan, if you're like a Weller lover, you tend not to be rye so much, and I'm the other way around. The people that love rye tend to not love wheated so much. Rye tend to have a little pepperier taste to it, mm-hmm. a little more spice instead of a more corn mm-hmm. bourbon, which is more sweet and honey.
Sweet, right.
Now, you're going to find this is still sweet because there's still 39% corn in here.
Sure, yeah.
So this is a super easy rye to drink. It is not super peppery and spicy. There's still quite a bit of corn in here, but I'm looking forward to seeing
right,
what your first taste is here.
Smell? Right off the bat, oak?
Smells delicious.
I see what you mean about the spice. It's not hot. It's not burnt.
No.
The tongue hot.
No,
but it's a
it's a peppery.
Let me taste that again.
It's a little more of a, yeah, it's not spicy as in Briny spicy, but there's more spice flavor to it.
It's a dimensional drink.
This one is, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot going on when you drink it because you get like the vapors come off almost immediately as soon as they hit your tongue. You start to taste everything.
Yeah, you would not guess this is 90 proof.
No.
This drinks, would, yeah. Drinks like an 80 proof.
Get a little honey, but not a lot of honey.
Yeah, like I said, there's yeah. still sweetness in there.
Yeah.
Because of the corn. Which I
it's good. I like it.
Yeah.
I'd buy it again.
I love rye.
It's pretty good.
Now, there is a... This is a 6 here, which to me is a gift from Buffalo Trace, because there's an 18-year...
I went a little light on the pour.
You did. There's an 18-year that...
Malo Mar?
Yes, absolutely. I would love to get my hands on, but they release it but once a year, and it is extremely hard to get. I would love to taste that because while I think this is very good, it is not a it's not my favorite rye. But it is
okay.
But it's very good.
I think it's good, yeah. I can see why they mix this drink. Because it does have such distinct, potent, peppery flavor. It probably come out in a mixed drink still.
Yeah.
So I can see why they chose this specific blend to make it.
And that's why
a drink out of.
Most Manhattans and Old Fashions are made with rye.
I get it.
That's the traditional. Although we did learn, we had a little history lesson.
Yeah. On, what was that?
And the
pepper.
I think it was.
Was it a pepper? Yeah.
James Pepper.
James Pepper. I think that was the one. The 1776.
Now, pepper is not a rye. Whiskey. So at some point in time, things shifted to using a rye.
But it does have a very, very oaky flavor. And I wonder if they pick stuff that has a one dominant flavor because they know that'll come through in the mixed drink.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
And with those drinks, you're adding sugar. You're adding things so you don't... So going with something that is stronger and not as sweet... It's going to be better. It's not going to be an overly sweet drink because you're going to add sugar to it.
Yeah.
So, all right, rate this. I'm curious what your rating
is. So you're going to be surprised by this one.
Yeah.
I didn't think I would like rye. I'm going to give this a 7.5. That's pretty high for me. And the only reason why it's not an 8, right, is I think that it could actually use... I think it could use a little more punch and the alcohol content. Which is something I never thought I would say about a drink because I usually like where they put it. But I think that a little more zip to it would actually add a little more bite.
And that's where I think if we could ever get our hands on the 18-year, I think that's what we would find.
Okay. But very good.
Yeah, this is really good. Yeah. This is definitely one, you know, I'm going to give my what I buy it again or not.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I would definitely. Especially if I
could. At 50?
I'm not paying $50 for it.
At 20, at the MSRP?
Yeah, at 23, I may pay 40.
40?
But generally, I try not to spend over MSRP. And then, thankfully, in Ohio, we are a control state, so they have to sell it for MSRP. So
that's good to know.
Yeah.
But then you just never get it.
Yeah, no.
That's the downside of that.
It's not as easy to get. And I honestly wish Buffalo Trace would just raise the prices.
Yeah. Raise the prices. If the
demand's like, there.
Listen, I'm going to give... All right, let's give Buffalo Trace a small lesson here.
Yeah, because they don't really know what to... I mean...
I'm going to teach you about supply and demand.
Massive corporation is no
idea. If there's a massive demand for something, right, or you don't have enough supply and there's a massive demand, you can raise the price and still sell out. Yeah. You make more money.
Make more money.
We get whiskey because we're willing to pay a little more.
Capitalism 101.
All right, you're welcome. I'll take my check in the mail. Thank you.
But just don't sell it to me for more than 23.
Yeah, Greg gets excluded. That's part of the deal here.
Yeah. So. Get into our topic for today.
Topics.
Which is something that me and a commenter worked on the other day, which is talking about customizing a handgun. We are not talking about cutting for a red dot.
Nope.
We are talking about Cerakote. We're talking
trigger
about
jobs.
Slide milling.
Slide milling.
Talking about
stipples.
Stipple jobs. What else?
Mag chops.
Porting.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some guns which you don't see that too much anymore because most of these gun companies have caught on to, people
Right. That's one, because we're old in the Senate. Yeah. Can't remember when they used.
Back in the day, we used to take a Glock 17.
Yep.
And cut the grip down to a 19.
Yep.
Like 26, I've even seen.
Yep.
But those days are
long gone.
Seem to be long gone.
Yeah.
All right. I am going to take the side of that you should not customize your gun. You are taking the side of that you
modify
should.
Away. Yep.
I'm just going to run through real quick. We each have 3 points. My 3 points and why you should not customize a carry gun is you're chancing making your life-saving tool unreliable.
Hmm.
Adding things like even Cerakote, you're adding possible, if depending on who you have Cerakote it, you're adding thickness to Cerakote to things you shouldn't, and there's issues there. You're doing a trigger job that you probably did. And let's be honest, you probably don't know what you're doing. And then there's waste of money. Adding trigger, custom paint job, all this stuff is adding money to something that you really don't need to add money to. That money could be utilized more wisely. And the last thing that we could probably have a whole another podcast or video about is modifying your gun. Your gun is going to, if you get into a self-defense situation, your gun is going to be taken. The defense is going to look at that gun and figure out if you did anything to it and use that against you, telling a jury full of people who know nothing about guns except for they're bad and they murder people that you made your gun more deadly. Now, we know that that's BS, but for somebody who doesn't know anything about guns, modifying a gun, the only reason you would do that is to make it better and more deadly. So those are my 3 points.
So
hit yours up real quick.
I've got some problems with that, but we'll get into that later. I've got a couple of points, 3 of them, in fact. And the first one is, your life is important. Therefore, I think you should use the best tools that you have available to defend it. That's how I believe. I think it's how most people believe. You want to get the best gun you can. And the whole point in modifying your gun is to make it better. Right? And it leads me into the second point, which is that stipple jobs and trigger jobs are designed to make your gun better. Stipple jobs, the whole point in that is so when your gun is slippery and wet on your skin all day because you're sweating out in the hot heat, still get a nice, solid, good grip on that gun. Trigger jobs, the whole thing is the trigger job. And if you don't believe me, try this. It is to minimize the amount of input that you have with the trigger. And when you're a sloppy shooter, the reason why you can slap a new trigger in it and become a better shooter is because you are getting a device designed to minimize the amount of input that you put on your sights when you squeeze the trigger. So trigger jobs help you shoot more accurately when you're in a stressful situation, I think. And the third point that I think is pretty hefty here, okay? Maybe the most important point I've had so far. You're going to carry this thing every day. You should like it. You should love how it looks. It is a thing, a part of your EDC, just like your keys and your knife. You need to like what it does, how it functions, and you're going to want to practice with it, so you might as well like your gun. And so those are my 3 main points.
Okay.
Now, I've got some things to say about your points,
Greg. Go for it.
What was your first point here?
First point is making the chance of making your gun unreliable.
Yeah, so you know if your gun's unreliable. It's that simple. Go to the range, shoot with it. You'll know if it works or not. Give it 500, 600, 700 rounds. Guess what? If it doesn't have any malfunctions, it's reliable enough.
How many people are willing to spend, especially these days, $1,000 on ammo to make sure that their gun is reliable?
Same people who are willing to spend $2,000 to get them cut, stippled,
and very few. I bet most people do a trigger job. And honestly, most people, do a trigger job, stick that gun in their holster, and carry it.
Man, I hope that's not the case.
And I bet the next group of people are like, I'm going to test this. They'll go put like a mag or two through it.
I think we can both agree that's the wrong move right there.
That is the wrong move.
You want to at least test your new gun, right? You don't get a gun from the store, put it in your pants, and then call it a day.
Yeah.
You need to like actually shoot it and get to know it and come to love it. That's the whole point. So then your last point that you made, I really kind of disagree with, and that was that the jury is going to see this deadly weapon and say, oh, he made it more deadly. Frankly, that doesn't really matter, right? I don't care if you kill somebody with a pocket knife who's trying to kill you, or you kill them with an anti-air missile. If they're trying to kill you, you're killing them back in self-defense, and that's your right to do so, to defend your own life. And it doesn't matter upon which means, so long as it's not unrealistically inhumane that you choose to defend your life, you are not guilty of, like, malice murder with a firearm if you're defending yourself.
So I think this is the hardest thing for us to wrap our minds around, because we are gun people. We own multiple guns. We've done stipple jobs, and we've done trigger jobs. We've done all this stuff, and we know that we know the truth behind it. However, you have to try to take your head out of being a gun guy and knowing all this stuff, and try. It's so hard to do. You have to try to forget all that. And if all you know is what the news says, that guns kill children, and women and shoot up nightclubs, and they're horrible things, and that's all you know about guns, and now you have a professional, a lawyer, somebody who is supposed to be
a twister of words
up here in the world of truth, mm-hmm. right? Telling you that this guy did things to his gun to make it shoot faster, so he could put more bullets into the person, that he ported it, and he cut the slide so that he could shoot it faster and spray more bullets. Like, this is the BS that they're going to use, and your life is on the line because you may go to jail for this. Is the stock gun that you bought not capable of defending your life? Because here's the thing. If you don't think it is, you probably shouldn't have bought it. If the only way that gun is going to be able to defend your life is with modifying it, then you probably shouldn't have bought the gun to begin with.
See, and I think that you're basing this off of a juror being a peer evaluating you on their feelings. But that's not what jurors are supposed to do. They're supposed to evaluate on the facts of life. And do you have reasonable doubt? And is there reasonable doubt that you, in this case, would be more like, is there a reasonable doubt that you defended your life? Right? Is that what we're thinking?
Like,
is
sure, it defending your life, but, or is it? But I'm saying, it will. Yeah. What you, I'm just saying this. What you've done to your gun will be used against you.
That's all
I'm saying. What you've done to your gun will be used against you. How much ammo do you want to give to be used against you?
It's a balance.
That's all I'm saying, is how much do you want to
be... You better
be
sure it's a reasonable case for defending your life.
And obviously, there's your side. Hopefully, your lawyer is, mm-hmm. is fighting back and is educating on why you've done these things.
Yeah.
All I'm saying, believe it or not, is what you've done to your gun will be used against you. And you have to ask, will this gun in its stock formation do what I need it to do or not?
See, but the same logic can be saying, well, why then aren't you just shooting a revolver? Those aren't scary, right? A revolver's perfectly capable of killing somebody, but you have made the decision that having more ammunition in your gun in a semi-auto is a much better chance of it saving your life than, say, a revolver. Otherwise, you carry a revolver, because those aren't scary as much as, say, a full auto Glock that they would see, right? And so there's a level here in which you have to choose where you want to be.
Yeah, there's a line of reasonableness.
Because frankly, defending yourself with a baseball bat is probably much more friendly to a jury than a gun. But when you're in the middle of the night, you hear a bump. You don't
see
like
the pictures of the person that you
that would be gruesome.
Caved in their head.
But kind of the same
it's
principles.
Just, I'm just throwing out there is something to think about. Something that
I wonder what
something that you have to realize. What, I want to say, what was your points again, real quick? Just
so I have need a best tool to save your own life. This got hit down. And then stipple jobs and triggers improve the ability to perform under harsh conditions, along with customizing your gun makes it more yours. And it's something you're going to carry with.
And to me, that point to me is kind of the opposite of the point that I made of just, it's kind of a waste of money. You know, that money that you can spend doing slide cutting and Cerakoting, stippling and trigger, one could buy a whole nother gun. But two,
for sure.
That That money that you spent on that could have gone towards ammo and training, which 100% will make you more efficient
sure.
with your stock gun
absolutely.
Than without shooting and training with a decked out gun. I think I feel like
true.
I feel like everybody would agree in that.
Just tactics, 100%. But this is more than tactics. I feel like carrying a gun is not just a way to defend your life, and that is a very important aspect of that, but it's also a hobby and a community that we've chosen to join and become a part of. And as such, like just like a knife is a box opener, and getting a sweet knife from any of the knife companies that make beautiful custom knives aren't going to help you open boxes any better. You do it because it's a part of your everyday carry and you like to look at beautiful things. And these are beautiful things.
Yeah. I get it.
But I'd love, like to know.
Yeah, I'd love to know what our listeners, viewers think. What do you guys think about customizing a carry gun? I don't care what you do to your range toys and stuff, but what do you think about customizing your everyday carry gun? Leave a comment, shoot us an email, whatever method works best for you.
What you got on the list here? I know we got some other stuff
all right.
to discuss.
So,
and you always come up with great topics.
I have a list of amazing topics.
I'm sure you do. I am certain that we're going to enjoy this.
What tastes better, dog or cat?
So, when I think of taste, I think of fat, right? They're both fairly lean creatures. But cats tend to be like bulbous, Garfield-esque. I think you solved this.
Cat probably tastes better.
Cat
I just
probably
know
tastes better.
I love dogs.
Certainly easier for me to kill, so.
All right, well, we can't argue that because we both agree.
Yeah.
All right. What's more annoying, a vegan or a CrossFitter?
Oh man,
it's pretty hard.
Aren't
to,
they the same?
The only thing that's worse is somebody from Texas.
Oh come on now!
That's
how you get me to walk off the show. I'll have you right now. I don't know if you guys knew this. I'm from Texas, so it's a great place, wonderful place. You guys really like it. If you ever have a chance to go visit it, you really should. And
we're always
trying to tell everyone that we're from Texas because
it's fine, but
it's a wonderful place. Right. Probably shouldn't do that.
Yeah, all right, we won't do that one. All right, I think I want to take a shift here from we've been in firearm lane for the last, I think this is the 11th episode or something.
Okay.
I want to take a shift out of firearms here, and let's talk about vehicle. What is the best...
Take a shift. I see what you did there.
What is the best vehicle to own... For, I hate to use the term bugging out because I think it's been overused, but...
Bugging out.
What is the best vehicle type for, I'm just going to say it, for bugging out. So,
okay.
Something happens, you got to get
gas
out of town.
Mileage, baby.
Maybe it's a forest fire, like this happens all the time. There's people who are watching this who I'm sure probably had to deal with having to try to get out.
Yeah.
All the way to, let's just imagine that there's... Just fall out and wait to get out. So, because you generally see bug out vehicles being jacked up trucks with winches and all kinds of things.
That's not the right answer here.
Which is my Jeep. I got 37s and it's lifted and
yep.
is extremely capable.
The places killed in the streets.
The places that Jeep goes is pretty incredible.
You know where it can't go?
You drive
300 miles.
A cute little Kia. I absolutely can.
Oh, he's got to have him go to the gas station.
Does he gas? That's
right?
Why I have gas cans.
I got
but you
412 miles
if
in the
I
tank.
Need to, you're going to get stuck going through a median if you have to cross over.
No.
A wet median, it's been raining.
All-wheel drive, snow tires. Mm-mm.
You are stuck.
Mm-mm. I've taken a Toyota off-road in the desert. It was a Corolla. I can get my little Kia.
He's going to be stuck in the median.
No.
Well, I put it in four high. I don't even need four low and lockers.
Yeah. Can you?
I'm gonna go through that median. Yeah. Hit the other side of the road.
Can you even make it to Columbus from here on one tank?
Oh, stop.
Come on.
All right.
Well, we know which positions we take.
Yep. All right. Let's talk about best capable bug out vehicles in realistic situations.
Next week.
Next week.
Be great. Don't forget to like, don't forget to subscribe. This is going to be a hilarious topic because Greg's very much so attached to his truck. Cheers.
You love your cute little Kia.
It's amazing.
See you guys. Rolling.
Should we do this one in a seductive voice? Whiskey Wednesdays.
Where we? It's a grand
Whiskey
drink.
Wednesday. Sit back. While we argue.
Listen to our sultry voices as we take you on a journey.
Through the speed of time and space, baby.
Through some.
Oh, yeah.
Savory bourbon and some sassy chat. Savory bourbon, sassy chat.
Sassy chat. Good morning.
I think we got a new tagline.
It's like Ron Swanson and his saxophone. Yeah, it is. All right.
Let's do this.